New insights on Habit 7, Sharpen the Saw. My favorite play of all time is Hamilton, and after seeing it for the first time, I learned all I could about its creator, Lin-Manuel Miranda. I was intrigued to discover that Hamilton might never have happened if Miranda hadn't sharpened the saw. In 2008, Miranda had been working nonstop for 7 years to bring his first musical, In the Heights, to the Broadway stage. After winning 4 Tony Awards for his debut, he finally made time for a vacation to Mexico. He packed a little light reading for the beach, Alexander Hamilton by Ron Chernow, the exhaustive biography of a mostly forgotten founding father. The moment my brain got a moment's rest, Hamilton walked into it, Miranda said in an interview with Arianna Huffington. It's no accident that the best idea I've ever had in my life, maybe the best one I will ever have in my life, came to me on vacation. From that seed of an idea, Hamilton went on to shatter records, become a cultural phenomenon, and win Miranda a Pulitzer Prize, an Emmy, a Grammy, and 11 Tony Awards. I think it's fair to say that, unlike Miranda, Alexander Hamilton himself didn't subscribe to the principle of renewal, and he paid a price for it. In the musical, his wife Eliza implores him to rest in a song called Take a Break, but he refuses. Arianna Huffington believes burnout itself, specifically sleep deprivation, destroyed Hamilton's presidential hopes, threatened his marriage, and ultimately took his life. She writes, Hamilton was successful not because of his overwork and burnout, but in spite of them. And perhaps if he had listened to Liza's advice to take a break, he'd have had more time to build the nation he was so devoted to. Unlike Miranda's cautionary tale about Hamilton, the renowned presidential historian Doris Kearns Goodwin shared that Franklin Delano Roosevelt took a 10-day fishing trip during some of the most critical days of World War II, and yet it was during that trip that FDR came up with the crucial Lend-Lease Act, which provided the means for the United States to lend war supplies to its allies during the war. She also shares how Abraham Lincoln went to the theater 100 times during the Civil War. When the lights went down and a Shakespeare play came on, Lincoln could forget the war and clear his mind for a few precious hours, she said. And Teddy Roosevelt exercised 2 hours every afternoon at the White House with a raucous game of tennis or a hike in the wooded cliffs of Rock Creek Park or a boxing or wrestling match. As a culture, we have not taken these lessons to heart. Burnout is increasing. Loneliness is increasing. The amount of time people spend on screens is increasing. Win the daily private victory. I've gotten stuck in this trap too, but I've learned that I can't afford not to sharpen the saw. During a very busy time of life, I came home from work one day to discover that my wife and daughter, without any input from me, had purchased a 3-foot macaw housed in a cage the size of our kitchen table. After hearing the earth-shaking squawks from this giant parrot, I became a believer in the theory that birds evolved from dinosaurs. That first night, the shrieks were so loud that 2 of our neighbors called to make sure everything was okay. We were all so busy, the last thing we needed was another pet. "Why didn't you discuss this with me?" I fumed. I was caught off guard by the whole thing, and I ended up saying some impolite things to my wife, Rebecca, that night. The next morning, I woke up tired and feeling like I was too busy to sharpen the saw that day. But on cue, I heard my dad's voice in the back of my head saying, "Have you ever been too busy driving to take time to get gas?" So I got up, went downstairs, and worked out for 30 minutes. I then read and planned for the day. And while I was reviewing my mission statement and personal goals, my conscience reminded me of the rude things I'd said to Rebecca the night before about the bird. So, after getting ready for work, I sat down with my wife to apologize. It was good that I did. She made that clear. Rebecca ended up forgiving me and sent me to work with a hug. I arrived at the office prepared and fresh, which was vital, because over the course of that day, I had to make several important business decisions involving millions of dollars. Luckily, I was on my game and made smart decisions. Having won my daily private victory that morning made all the difference, and it only took 1 hour. In case you were wondering, we sold the macaw a few weeks later to a guy who kind of looked like a pirate. My father believed in and practiced this habit of renewal. It seemed like he was forever riding his stationary bike while reading books and magazines. So many impressions and ideas came to him in the wee hours of the morning, so he kept that time sacred. He worked hard and traveled a ton, but he always scheduled downtime and especially loved taking family vacations to his cabin in Montana. While there, he'd get up early and go on long mountain bike rides, making stops along the way to read and to think. One of the indelible impressions of my youth was seeing him return from these morning rides full of enthusiasm and affirmation and saying something like, "I had the greatest idea come to me this morning." His energy was contagious. Even with the demands of a large family, he woke up early and went to bed early. Over weekends and at family reunions, the rest of us would go to the movies, eat junk food, and stay up late chatting. We'd look around and say, "Where's Dad?" And he'd have gone to bed. Everybody else would sleep in, and he'd be up at the crack of dawn, exercising, thinking, reading, writing. He'd say, "Kids, you need to read more. I'm reading 10 books a week." And we'd say, "No, you're not. You just skim the books. You don't read them. That doesn't count." He also loved spending time with Mom, going on long putt-putt motorcycle rides around the neighborhood where they could talk it over. Truly, much of his public success and the strong relationships he enjoyed sprang from this practice of getting himself centered each day and winning his own daily private victory. The fact is, we humans are made up of 4 parts: body, heart, mind, and spirit. And all 4 parts are interdependent and need constant nourishment. Like 4 tires on a car, if 1 tire is low on air, all 4 tires wear unevenly. It's hard to show love, your heart, when you're exhausted, your body. On the other hand, when you're feeling motivated and in tune with yourself, your spirit, you'll have better judgment, your mind, and find it easier to treat others with respect, your heart. Since sharpen the saw is a quadrant 2 activity, important but not urgent, it won't just happen. You must happen to it by making it a priority. But like all quadrant 2 activities, the return on the time and energy you spend sharpening the saw is exponential. Don't ever feel guilty about making time for yourself. On flights, they tell you that if the cabin loses pressure, you should put on your own oxygen mask before assisting others. You won't be much use to your 3-year-old or best friend if you are unconscious from lack of oxygen. Rule your technology. Don't let it rule you. Technology is sucking away our time and energy and dulling our saws like nothing else humans have ever encountered. Recently, I attended a presentation on helping teens manage their technology at my kids' middle school. The auditorium was so packed with parents desperate for advice that I had to sit in the aisle. The presenter said that teens are spending 35 hours a week in front of a screen, which is literally rewiring their brains. He said excessive social media often leads to depression and anxiety, and many of the popular sites encourage violence and pornography and are full of predators. It was alarming. His main point was this: if you don't take control of how technology is used in your home, it will take control of your home in harmful ways. He encouraged us to work with our kids to create a family data contract, like a win-win agreement around technology use. So my wife and I sat down with the 3 kids we have living at home and worked on what we call the Covey Family Technology Contract. After reminding them that we pay for their phone plans, we agreed on many things. We set a daily screen limit time of 3 hours. Each night, phones would be charged at the docking station in the kitchen, and no one was allowed to take their phones to bed. Reluctantly, they agreed not to use their devices during mealtimes or while in the car. "But I get bored," my son complained. Being bored is good for your brain, I replied. And besides, you need to learn to talk to each other. We haven't been perfect in living up to our contract. Sometimes we find our kids' phones in their beds. But in general, our family has followed the contract and has made a huge difference. Before we created it, my 11-year-old son, Wyatt, was addicted to a video game. At one point, because he was unable to keep within his agreed-upon hours, we had to pull him off cold turkey, and he went through withdrawals. He was literally shaking. It was scary, but he got through it. A week later, he actually thanked me, saying, "Since I've quit that video game, I feel so much happier, Dad." This advice doesn't just apply to kids. It's applicable to all of us. For example, I have to fight my predilection for reading the news all night on my phone. While there is no one right way to manage technology in the home, I believe that not having an agreed-upon family plan is just asking for trouble. If you have kids, I encourage you to come up with some kind of family data contract to help you deal with perhaps the biggest threat to our renewal and mental health we've ever seen. Let's not allow screens to consume us. The ancient Greeks' famous saying, "Nothing overmuch," is a good reminder that all things must be done in moderation, including our technology. A woodsman once said, "Give me 6 hours to chop down a tree, and I will spend the first 4 sharpening the axe." Axe or saw, the point is the same. So many jobs in today's knowledge worker age depend on wise decisions and good judgment. So much of our happiness depends on the quality of our relationships. You may think that you don't have time to exercise, go to lunch with a friend, read a book, write in your journal, attend that conference, take a break, or go on a family vacation. In reality, you don't have time not to.